Good morning, Western Wisconsin. Let's see what we're up to. This is Spectrum West. I'm Al Ross. Good to have you along on this Thursday morning. Today, there are short plays written about the people involved in and affected by bullying. They are called The Bully Plays. And they're coming in September to the Heidi Center in Chippewa Falls. We welcome director Frank Bartella today. Jim Oliver is going to talk Shakespeare. Then he adds, in the park, as he welcomes a cast member, Jordan Heckman, appearing in the Menominee Theater Guild production of The Tempest. Did you know there's a museum in Spooner all about canoes? The Wisconsin Heritage Canoe Museum. And we'll share some dialogue with its director, Jed Malishki. This is the weekend of the Great River Folk Fest in La Crosse. And the marketing chair, Bobby Wilson, she's here with all the Folk Fest details. And we begin with something from the news department, news that pertains to the arts. The Confluence Project, or the desire to build a new art center in downtown Eau Claire, continues to percolate on what appears to be a front burner. Earlier this week, interested parties converged for a lunchtime discussion, and WPR News intern Chia Vang got the scoop for Spectrum West.
Performing arts groups voiced concerns about the proposed Confluence Center during a meeting at City Hall. Eau Claire City Council President Carrie Kincaid brought the groups together to foster a better understanding of what the project is all about. Kincaid spelled out her vision for the summit.
As you know, many difficult and complex conversations have already transpired about the proposed Confluence Project, but I particularly felt that one of the missing components of those conversations was an in-depth discussion with the local arts organizations, in which they're all in the same room, and so the same information is being laid on the table, and you're face-to-face. So it seemed like we were filling in an important gap in that information sharing.
Prior to this meeting, letters were received from various arts organizations. One concern stood out a bit further than others.
Not surprisingly, local arts organizations, it seems to me, are most concerned about access to what might be the new community arts center. You know, what if there's a conflict over a date? Will there be priority booking? How is that all going to go? As they use the State Theater now, the university is not a consumer of the State Theater. In the new Community Arts Center, the university will be sharing space, and they're a large entity. So the arts groups are concerned, want to clarify how the university is going to enter into that scheduling mix.
What else can we expect?
The next task for council, official task, is a closed session on Monday, August 26th. And in that session, we will be contemplating a pre-development agreement. Those are agreements that we execute with developers that spell out the contractual arrangements for developing the site. The developers have now asked us. They've laid a development agreement on the table, and now we're going to respond. On the less, I guess, official side, I see some follow-ups from this conversation today, checking with the university to see if they can begin a scheduling matrix. I also hope that the local arts groups and the Regional Arts Council begin maybe to meet regularly. I think Ben Richgruber suggested that they too begin thinking about how should we do scheduling and start to have those conversations amongst themselves. And the council also has ongoing conversations on an individual basis with citizens with all kinds of questions. And so we help each other answer those questions. And all that work goes towards making a decision.
Ben Richgruber, director of the Eau Claire Regional Arts Council, is a veteran at these kinds of discussions. But the need will stick around until all of the important questions are answered.
Groups like this and conversations like this are a great chance for us to keep telling the story of how we expect this to work. It is very complicated, and there are a lot of players involved. There's a strong level of explanation that has to be done. I mean, we've been working on this project for, it's been announced a year, and there was some time before that, and with Clear Vision before that. So there are many of us that have been involved in having these conversations for quite a while. We know it inside and out, but we forget that not everyone has been along for all of those conversations. So we need to get them back up to speed, and this is another great opportunity to do that.
According to those discussing the arrangements, there will be a Confluence Council, a governing body and melting pot of interested individuals representing fundamental players.
Well, the Confluence Council will be the governing board for the Arts Center. So they will be facility-specific people. They're going to be the ones that arbitrate any disputes on dates and make sure that all the rates are set, and will be ultimately responsible for the performance of the building. The Eau Claire Regional Arts Council, ECRAC, will be a user of this building. We're going to have office space in there, and we're going to be presenting shows in a similar fashion that we do now. So we'll be a user and a tenant of the facility. We're two separate things, and I think that the Confluence Council that will oversee the facility is very important so we can make sure that any disputes between the community or the university can be settled appropriately.
Scheduling parity and affordability for all are hurdles still on the track.
I think those are the most important. Everybody can do their own thing, and everyone's going to be involved when it comes to design of the building and what kind of bells and whistles we want in there. But really, the nuts and bolts of everyday business for all these organizations, and it is business, these are people and jobs, is, you know, rates and dates. That's what it really all boils down to. So if we can continue to reassure them that those two will be as beneficial for them as possible, then I think we'll be able to move forward.
Executive Director of the Eau Claire Children's Theater, Wayne Merrick, is satisfied with the progress and looks forward to what's next in the process.
It would be nice to have representatives of the developers and the university around the table when we have such discussions. I'm sure they'll be there for the next work sessions with the City Council, of course. I guess we're hoping that when powers that be decide who's on the Confluence Council, that it is fair and representative of the arts groups and the different users of the facility. I guess we're just not sure who eventually will decide the makeup of that group.
And the director of the Chippewa Valley Theater Guild echoes a faith in process having components with the same name as hers.
The project hasn't been fully developed, and so we're just dealing with the operations model and rates and scheduling, all those things that would affect the Chippewa Valley Theater Guild and all the arts groups. Any of the work sessions that give us more information about the Confluence project, about operations, you know, helps us understand and understand what our fit will be in the new project or the potential project. So we look forward to more work sessions.
That's Ann Sessions, who also attended Monday's meeting at City Hall. Kincaid, who hosts the noon discussion at City Hall, is proud of where we've been and where she believes we can go.
This is a very unique opportunity. The university, the state of Wisconsin, private developers, private citizens, I think that we're up to the task, and I think we're showing that we do have the ability to wade through new and complicated and exciting ideas.
And as far as hurdles, Rich Gruber sees them in a more gastronomic light.
Together, we're definitely stronger, and the synergy with this project far outweighs any of these little hiccups along the way.
The Confluence Project, still in motion, still with wrinkles, but people are working to iron them out. And Spectrum West will keep you posted along the way. I'm Chia Vang.
Thanks, Chia. Spectrum West continues for Thursday, August 22. With a bit of Willie Porter in the background, we'll tell you about, well, he's the headliner there. 2013, the 38th year of the Great River Folk Fest. Bringing people together on a summer day, it's obvious the lacrosse-based event is doing something right. You would think it had evolved a lot over nearly four decades, but marketing chair Bobby Wilson says that tradition plays a big role in the application of folk, the music, the art, the feel. So the answer to a question about growth and progress might not be what you expect.
Oh, well, we try, we hope. Sometimes resist evolving because, you know, tradition and all that. But I think we're trying to keep up with what people hope is a really fun weekend.
You know, when one hears the term folk festival, one thinks immediately about music, at least I did.
Mm-hmm.
But this is folk culture, and one of the pillars of this weekend has to do with crafts. And this isn't just making hats out of beer cans. This is a pride in craftsmanship and the heritage behind it, isn't it? This is this kind of a backbone of the festival.
It is. It has always been a partner with the music, and we jury in the crafters, as it were, and then also have a juror from the community this year. It's somebody from the art department at UWL who goes around and chooses the best presentation and craft. And so, yeah, we have some really beautiful things.
And, of course, as I alluded, there is music. I see there are three sites, music round robins, if you will, and also for jams and workshops. Tell me about that setup.
Well, we've done that in the past, and then it tended to kind of fritter away. We built up the so-called workshop site this year back to the point that there's something going on no matter where you are on the grounds, and if you... you know, heard this group before or that group before, you want to head over and hear the Cheeseland Uke Band, there's a chance you never heard them before, and so that's a local bunch with a bunch of ukuleles.
Tell me about the workshops. What kind of workshops can people take part in?
Well, they're kind of loosely titled that. We do have a fellow from Dave's Guitar Shop. You know, we're famous here in La Crosse to have that institution, and he's going to... talk about the qualities of a good guitar. So that'll be nice for all the amateur musicians in the, and not so amateur in the audience. There's a drum circle, again, so I guess that no prior talent needed, maybe. The ukulele, like I said, we're trying a poetry slam for the first time. I've never been at one, so let's see what that is all about.
I haven't been to one personally, but I know they're happening all over.
Well, yeah.
And back to music, there's a good selection. You are going to feature one of the best guitar players any of us will ever see. Willie Porter is there on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And you open Friday with Dar Williams. And how about the entertainment in the order of appearance?
First, Dar Williams is our Friday night opener. And, boy, we're already getting ticket orders like no other year. Then, of course, the people will be appearing during the day, but the main stage Saturday concert is big. Barbara Jean, haven't heard her yet, but a very promising young singer. Harmonious Whale, I think Wisconsin is familiar with them, and everybody's eyebrows go up when we say they're going to be there. They're great fun. The May North, some folks from the Twin Cities, kind of all grass, I assume very peppy. Shell, these gals from Fort Collins, Colorado, Four Sisters, they are gorgeous if they can play as beautifully as they look. We're in for a treat. And then, of course, Willie Porter closes that night.
There's also a children's area. Tell us what the kids' area is going to be like.
Right, right. And it's also no hopping around in inflatables and being hyped up. This is, we feel our audience wants something quality for their kids. So Paul Halter is our beloved local juggler. You would not believe what this guy does. And he'll be there both days. Children's yoga both days, Bluff Country Tail Spinners, just a storytelling guild that really can keep the kids' attention beautifully. And this year, Michael Scott's Old School Variety Show, Sunday afternoon. I am looking forward to this because let's just see what he does for the kids. It's a part improv and I don't know what all. It'll be a real treat.
We're talking with Bobby Wilson. She's the marketing chair of the Great River Folk Festival. It happens on the UW La Crosse campus this weekend, Saturday and Sunday. Bobby, how about food? I'm going to allow you or ask you to give me an I can almost taste it description of the food.
Well, your mouth will be watering if you can almost taste it. The Root Note is a local coffee house, but they are branching into, oh, let's call them designer brats almost. If you're in a sausage mood, they've got the upscale version there. Crepe Jean-Luc, I should put on my French accent. This guy
nice.
Is local, and he is fabulous with these crepes, either savory or dessert types. You know, we're going the tradition route here, too, with this. People's Food Co-op and their curried sweet potatoes and chickpeas. Boy, you know, if anybody can go past the food tent without stopping, I got to hand it to them. The famous strawberry shortcakes and sundaes from Social Justice at one of our churches locally here. Pulled pork sandwiches. Jewish Women's League, then, with, their baba ganoush and hummus and all these wonderful things. And then we just heard that our beloved Euros people from, I don't know where they're from, but...
Wonderful. Got to have those.
Wonderful stuff inside of a, yep, inside of a pita.
You've got me watering. One thing I tripped over that I guess I wasn't aware of is the songwriting and performance contest. That seems to be a big deal.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Is it fifth annual now? Yes, indeed. And that takes a good chunk of Sunday at one of the sites. So we hope that these songwriters will bring their fans and we'll see who comes out on top. And there's a nice set of prizes for the winners. Somebody is crying now that they didn't get their application in when they hear this, but that's a nice place for some new talent.
Okay. The website, where do we go to get more information if we say to ourselves, you know, that was nice, Al, but I need more information?
And, of course, www.greatriverfolkfest.org. And also look for us on Facebook because there's some up-to-date chatter going on there as well.
Okay. And this is Saturday and Sunday. Gates open at 10 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Well, congratulations on 38 big years. This is the 38th annual Great River Folk Festival. Okay, Bobby, thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much.
Big cheers in the background for Willie Porter, of course. Headliner, the greatriverfolkfest.org is where all you need to know resides. There's a sampler of entertainers there. You can listen to some of the people coming. The Great River Folk Fest, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. In La Crosse. This is Spectrum West here on Wisconsin Public Radio, and support for WPR comes from Wisconsin Credit Union, offering full real estate services from listing to selling properties. Current listings, mortgage calculator, and other information is online at wisconsinrealty.org.
Support also comes from Simply Done in Downsville, a place for gifts, ideas, and space. Home of Dunn County Pottery, featuring wood-fired pottery in a local and fair trade gallery. Details at simply-dunn.com.
Support also comes from Festival Foods, dedicated to making grocery shopping easier for all shoppers with the introduction of pink, yellow, and green boomerang buy tags throughout the store. Festival Foods, a Wisconsin-grown company.
Spectrum Memo. It's the final Tuesday night blues from the Chippewa Valley Blues Society, a summer send-off in style with Mojo Lemon next Tuesday, August 27th, Owen Park Bandshell in Eau Claire. Well, let's see. Congratulations to Barry Hitt, new musical director of the Chippewa Valley Jazz Orchestra. The new season kicks off October 18th. Well, I talk a lot about how the privilege of being able to learn so much as I host this program, and one of those lessons was to discover the existence of the Wisconsin Canoe Heritage Museum. That's the word. It's in Spooner, and the director is a personable, experienced guy by the name of Jed Malishki, of whom I ask the history of the museum, from whence the idea arose, and how he got involved.
Well, the Wisconsin Canoe Heritage Museum in Spooner is about 5 years old now. Next year, we'll be going into our fifth season
okay.
being open.
Mm-hmm.
And it originated with a get-together of Jill and Jeff Dean, who were canoe collectors from Madison and also founders of the Wooden Canoe Heritage Association, which is a national organization. And they had relatives in Spooner and were visiting and happened to get together with Mort Dahl, who owns a furniture store in Spooner and is also a canoe collector. He had several fine antique canoes on display in his store, and they happened to notice them and get to talking. Well, the Deans had quite a collection of canoes, and they were looking for a place to donate them that would display them and keep the collection intact, and they were going to be retiring to Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
So long story short is a few enterprising citizens of Spooner got together and said, hey, we'll get a building and we'll establish a museum and if you donate these canoes. And so that started the collection. We had some help with the city in obtaining a building, and we renovated it with a lot of volunteer help. And we've had a lot of other acquisitions to our collection since then.
Mm-hmm.
So it's continuing nicely and growing.
A couple of things came to mind while you were saying that. Is this kind of exclusive to Spooner? Are there other canoe museums elsewhere?
Well, there are many boat museums and even, I think, some wooden boat museums in the country, but there is no other museum in the United States that's dedicated solely to canoes and canoe history.
Ah, okay.
There is a very excellent Canadian Canoe Museum in Peterborough, Ontario, I believe, but no other in the United States.
Okay, so then you were saying that people are donating their canoes. Are you getting, I guess my question is, have you received some pretty unique looking canoes? I'm guessing all sizes, huh?
Well, you know, we're kind of surprised. We get offers of donations probably weekly.
Oh.
I get a message and someone saying they've got this canoe. It was in my parents' garage rafters for all these years, whatever. And we actually have we're pretty selective on what we'll accept. I mean, we follow, you know, normal museum procedures of accessioning items to our collections.
Mm-hmm.
And when you do that, you take on a responsibility to maintain these, to store them properly, to maybe to display them, whatever. And we have a limited amount of space. So we have a collections committee that evaluates any of these offers of donations. And, you know, often we have to turn them down. But if there's a particular a good piece that we have missing from our collection and we think we can make use of that, then we'll accept them. A couple recent ones that are of interest is a Lucius guide boat, which is one of the two style guide boats that were made specifically for the Brule River in Wisconsin for guides to take out fishermen. And the other builder of these was Larocque, and we had a Larocque, but we did not have a Lucius, so now we have one of each.
Wow.
And there are a couple other interesting donations that we've picked up just this summer in that vein, and hope to have them displayed in some future exhibit.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, canoe was a cologne for men when I was growing up.
Well, you know, it still is, and we have some for sale in our gift store.
Get out of here. I thought you might, so I'm glad I brought that up.
Unless it's sold out. It could be sold out. I don't know.
I know the guys that wanted to look she-she. They called it canoe. The canoe really has a place in American history, doesn't it? I mean, it was the way to get around at one time, key to the exploration of America. Was it a Native American thing that we learned from, or what's like the earliest canoe that anyone has ever? I read some Scandinavian roots to it as well.
Well, I'm not necessarily an expert on all that historical data, but I'm certain that yes, it was a Native American technology. The canoe, you know, the earliest course form of canoes were dugouts, just a carved out log.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. There are very few of those in existence anymore, very few Native American birch barks from prior to the 1800s because they just don't last, the birch bark or whatever. But we do have a couple of birch bark canoes in our collection, and we actually display them alongside some of the later canoes to show the similarity in the design, the shapes, and the lengths and a lot of technology was taken from the Native Americans when the Europeans came here. They quickly abandoned their rowboats and said, these are no good for going up these streams and using the streams and the rivers as highways and transportation. The canoe is much better.
Sure. That's the voice of Jed Malishke. He is the executive director of the Wisconsin Canoe Heritage Museum. Is that something new to you? Well, it was to me when I heard about it, and I'm glad I did because I can't wait to get up there and visit. Been around for about 5 years, as he said. Within, Jed, a mission statement of sorts that I read, I saw the words, the cultural heritage of canoes. Is that what you guys are working to preserve, the cultural heritage of canoes?
Well, I would think so. It's not just a manufacturing thing or a product thing, but there's a lifestyle that goes along with canoes. I mean, we talked about, you know, the Native American origins of it. We talked about the later European exploration of the continent using the canoe. Certainly later than that, there was a canoe craze period around the turn of the last century, the early 1900s in the country, where, you know, there were canoe clubs and canoe outings And that is where you took your gal when you were sparking. You took her for a canoe ride. And so there were a lot of other cultural eras for the canoe over American history.
See, you just brought up something that shows me what I missed. I didn't take any girls out in a canoe. I should have thought of that a long time ago.
Well, you know, the period I was talking about was before there were automobiles.
Ah, yeah, well, I'm not that old. You not only have canoes that have been donated displays, you also make them there. Tell us about the canoe shop.
Well, actually, about half of our floor space is devoted to a canoe shop. And, you know, it was surprising to find out how many canoe builders there are still around and how many people interested in doing that and their own projects. But, you know, to build a canoe in your house or something, and usually we're talking about either cedar strip canoes or cedar canvas canoes, which is the older style construction, it's quite a project. You need the space for it. You need a canoe form, and there's a different form for every type of canoe, and you need specialized tools and a source for the wood. So it's hard for an individual to do that. So we wanted to establish a shop where individuals could come in and use the shop on their own particular project, whether it's to make a paddle or whether it's to restore an old canoe or build a new canoe.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you do restore your stuff there too as well, huh?
Yeah, we will work to do some restoration on some of the donations we get, and that's always something you have to think about. Are we going to, you know, restore this canoe? Are we going to leave it as is or just do a little repair or whatever? But
I'm glad this topic came up because it caused me to read about them, and I was, you know, over my lifespan, I've never really thought about. You mentioned the fact that, you know, birch bark or whatever bark canoes, you know, they weren't real, what's the word? They weren't always the toughest canoe. I mean, I never thought about it when I was a kid that, you know, birch bark, what's going to happen when you hit a rock? But the other thing was is that they were easily repairable. So interesting what people had to put up with years ago.
Yes, and the canoe shop is really one of the things that our visitors find very interesting, that we also have the shop. And if they're lucky, they come on a day when there's some activity in the shop or some projects going on, and they get to see, you know, the half-done stuff. And
sure.
So they like that.
Takes patience to build a canoe.
Well, I haven't tried one myself, so I would imagine, yes, it does.
Oh, I see those strips, though. I think, wow, I'd never be able to do that. Well, tell us about the meet and greet coming next Saturday. I read the release, and four words stood out for me personally. They were beer garden and cold ones. But I see you're going to squeeze a lot more than that into an afternoon. What's waiting for us?
Well, it is a Saturday of Labor Day weekend, and we have our annual canoe raffle drawing is scheduled for that day. And we decided to have just a little event so with some extra activities to kind of lead into that raffle drawing. So we're planning just a little activity from 1 to 4 o'clock. At 1 o'clock, we have our annual general membership meeting, and everybody's welcome to come and participate in that. We elect our board of directors for the coming year. We have a band coming from the Minneapolis area, and an old-time string band duo, and they'll provide some entertainment. Then we'll rope off a little area of our parking lot and set up a few tables and have some beer and burgers available to purchase, maybe raise a little money that way. So
You
can come and see the museum, hang out for a little while, have something to eat or drink, enjoy some music, and we just kind of have an easy day.
Yeah, sounds like a good time. In addition to this event, you also have a Heritage Day in the spring.
Yes, that's really our larger event of the year, and it's always the Saturday of Memorial Weekend.
Okay.
We have a boat show as part of that. We close off the street out in front and invite a lot of other people to bring their, maybe they have antique boats or they have projects they've built or they have boats for sale. Any kind of canoe or wooden boat is welcome, and we had a wonderful year this past year, a record number of exhibitors, so there's a lot to come and look at. And then you can see the museum, and we usually unveil our annual display. We have a new display every year.
Mm-hmm.
We do that on that day. So it's kind of our opening day for the season.
Jed Malishke, Executive Director, Wisconsin Canoe Heritage Museum. What's the website, Jed?
Just that, WisconsinCanoeHeritageMuseum.org.
Okay, so they can get all. I went to that website. It's got a lot of nice photos and stuff, so it's very helpful. Jed, thanks so much for being with us. Keep up the great work up there. I hope to stop in someday, as I'm sure a lot of people listening do as well.
And we're still open in the fall on weekends, or we're open by appointment, too. There's phone numbers on our website, even on the off-season. If you want to come by, we'll try to open up for you.
Who doesn't love a canoe?
That's right. Thank you, Al.
Thank you. Yeah, that's cool. Raise your hand if you had no idea there was a Canoe Heritage Museum in Spooner. I didn't know, but I do now, and I'm going to visit on my next trip to Spooner, as I said. And a place I don't get to nearly as often as I should, Spooner. Pretty stuff out there, good people. Spectrum Memo, what can I tell you? Volume 1 again presents the Sounds Like Summer Concert Series, Phoenix Park, downtown Eau Claire. Tonight, Thursday night, it's Evergreen Grass Band, Softly Deer, and Claytown. The first notes will drift across the confluence there at about 6:30. Plus, peering at the Volume 1 World Headquarters Friday evening, August 23rd, it's Eggplant Heroes at 7 o'clock. In Ladysmith, the Music in the Park summer season has a few more weeks. Tonight, Thursday night, it's the community band performing in the high school auditorium. Next Thursday, 6 p.m., the final Memorial Park show of the summer features Salute to the Opry. Bring a lawn chair to Memorial Park in Ladysmith, sponsored by the Rusk Area Arts Alliance and the Greater Ladysmith Area Chamber of Commerce. Dance classes for girls and boys ages 3 to 12 coming to the Heidi Center beginning Monday, September 16th through Monday, November 25th. They have ballet and creative movement, hip-hop and jazz, and a new preteen class. Information and registration at 723-8889. Heidi information is at cvca.net. Well, time for this week's Oliver Report. And this week it's about Shakespeare, who likes to visit a park, along with some adoring fans.
The Menominee Theater Guild's Shakespeare in the Park series is presenting The Tempest Friday through Sunday at the Wilson Park Bandshell in Menominee. Joining us to talk about The Tempest is Jordan Heckman, who plays the lead role, Prospero. Welcome to Spectrum West.
Thank you.
Well, you told me you've been working with Shakespeare in the Park for 5 years. So what has attracted you to the works of William Shakespeare?
Oh, I've always loved Shakespeare, back to when I was in college and they made us read it. What I like best, I think, about Shakespeare and Shakespeare in the Park specifically is how well a lot of the concepts translate 300 years later. The jokes are still funny. The character motivations are still accurate to modern times. It still resonates.
The biggest complaint you sometimes hear about Shakespeare's plays is that they're difficult for the average person to understand using the old English.
Mm-hmm. A lot of that actually has to do with the way they're written in verse. But I found that, and we try to do it, where instead of reciting the lines in verse like they're written, we parse them down into the sentences as they're intended.
Hmm.
So instead of the couplets always ending up in the right place, the periods always end up in the right place. It makes it a little easier to go by.
I always thought that in my one experience on a Shakespeare show was that made it easier to memorize because they were in verse.
Mm, and that's why they're written that way, so that traveling groups in the 1600s could pick them up overnight and memorize them.
Mm-hmm. So what other shows have you done? But let's talk about Shakespeare first and then any other theatrical stuff that you've done.
Well, Shakespeare in the Park. Last year, I directed Much Ado About Nothing there in the Menominee Bandshell. That one is still funny. I love that. The year before that, we did Midsummer Night's Dream, and I played a rather small role, Peter Quince, in that. And the year before that was As You Like It, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
And then before that, of course, Romeo and Juliet, which was the first one we did.
Some theater companies will do Shakespeare shows in modern dress or some other time frame. I remember seeing, I think, As You Like It, I think, done in the American South.
Mm-hmm.
Do you stay pretty much true to the times, or do you update the...
We have moved it around a little in previous ones. In this particular showing of The Tempest, however, we've kept it pretty classic Shakespeare era.
Mm-hmm. I guess we better find out what The Tempest is all about.
Well, essentially, the backstory of The Tempest is that there was a duke, the Duke of Milan, Prospero, and his younger brother, who's evil in that way that Shakespearean brothers always are, decides that he's unfit to be duke because he's too bookish. And so he conspires to shipwreck his brother and take the throne. And that's basically some years later is where the actual play starts, when Prospero's brother and all of his enemies sail near enough to his island that he can raise a storm with his magic and shipwreck them onto the shore.
Uh-huh. Who else? Who are the other principal actors in the cast?
Well, Prospero's daughter, Miranda, is being played by Melissa Neeland. I think her name is Neeland. I think they just got married last weekend. And she's doing a spectacular job. This is her first year with Shakespeare in the Park. And that's a fairly large role. In his second bid as my evil brother, Andrew Moe, who has played my evil brother in a previous play, will be playing Antonio, the wicked duke. Mm-hmm. And I'd say, I guess, the third most main cast member would be Arthur Neeland, who plays Caliban, the wicked spirit that Prospero commands, who rebels against him and plots for his life.
He is Jordan Heckman, who is a member of the cast of The Tempest, this year's offering in the Menominee Theater Guild's Shakespeare in the Park series. Oh, I asked you about what other Shakespeare stuff you've done. What other theatrical things have you done? What kind of your experience have you had in theater in general?
Well, years and years and years ago, I majored in theater at Mankato State University over in Minnesota.
That's now called Minnesota State University.
Minnesota State University, Mankato. Yeah, when I was there, they hadn't made the shift over yet. Just recently, I was in 12 Angry Men in Menominee at the Mabel Tainer. Mm-hmm. That was an excellent show to be a part of. I really enjoyed that. The year before, I had the opportunity to be in Streetcar Named Desire. But unfortunately, while remodeling my house, I had a bit of a table saw accident.
Ooh.
And had to drop out of that particular play. That made me very sad. But I'm pretty active with the Menominee Theater Guild now. It's a great organization that luckily they let me keep showing up and being in plays.
Well, that's great. So you must have a day job of some sort to finance this theater habit you have.
Well, it's hard to make it to rehearsals in the evening if you don't work all day. I work at North Star Fire Systems. I'm a fire systems technician. Mm-hmm. That's just a fancy way of saying I recharge fire extinguishers for a living. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm just curious, I guess, how does a theater major wind up working with fire equipment?
The same way anybody ends up anywhere, the long and winding path of life, right? Actually, it has a lot to do with the aforementioned table saw accident.
Oh,
medical bills, you know how they are.
You bet. You bet. What is the first show in the upcoming season that the Menominee Theater Guild is mounting?
Well, the next show is going to be The Importance of Being Earnest. The auditions have already gone. Looks like they've got a great cast. Should be a very funny show.
Now, you have acted and you have directed in particularly the Shakespeare series. What do you prefer to do? What do you like best?
You know, directing is fun. You get to see your vision of the play come together, but nothing beats being handed a character and making him your own. Mm-hmm. I'd say I would act 9 times out of 10 before I'd direct.
Well, we've been visiting with Jordan Heckman, a member of the cast of The Tempest, this year's offering in the Menominee Theater Guild's Shakespeare in the Park series. The show plays Friday through Sunday at the Wilson Park Bandshell in Menominee. Well, Jordan Heckman, thanks so much for being with us.
Well, thank you very much. And important to note, it's a free show. Come on down to the park and have a look.
Oh, you can't beat the price, can you?
Absolutely not.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from Ken Vance Volkswagen, featuring the 2013 Volkswagen Passat, a family sedan available in 14 trims, with each model having its own technology features. More at kenvance.com.
Support also comes from Visit Winona, where the scenic Great River Road leads to a summer full of hiking and biking adventures, blufftop panoramas to river valley scenes. Visit Winona.com. This is the year to discover Winona's outdoors.
Spectrum West. It's Thursday, the 22nd day of August. I'm Al Ross. So nice to have you along. The River Falls Public Library hosts sand painter Michael Augustin in an unusual exhibit beginning Saturday, an exhibit that's been created this week and will be destroyed when the show ends. He'll also be making a presentation and demonstration on Thursday, September 12th at the library at 7 p.m. Dar Williams performs her music at the State Theater Sunday evening at 7:30. One of America's very best singer-songwriters, says The New Yorker. Spectrum West continues, and I guess there's no need to pussyfoot around the topic by naming them anything more or less than what they are. They're the bully plays. They're about bullying and bullies and those who are bullied. A company called Dramatic Publishing has 24 such short scripts available. Deb Johnson of the Heidi Center looked them over and chose 7 to present in September. The plays are being directed by Frank Bartella. He stopped by the studio, and I wondered how he came to take on the project.
It was an ad in the Reader. Directors wanted, and normally, you know, when you do a show, you're the director running around with a script trying to find a place to do it. So it was nice to have it be the other way around.
Mm-hmm.
She sent me the scripts. I immediately fell in love with them. It was, you know, right up my alley, and we talked. And I got the job.
I understand this is kind of a revival for you. You have been in theater in the past and may have been out for a while, and now you're back.
Yes, I went to school for theater in college many years ago. I had my own theater for several years. I've done theater in Dubuque, in Iowa City, in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And then I sort of fell out and stopped doing shows when my son was born, and then all of a sudden, 20 years went by, and it's become an empty nester, and it's, you know, maybe I should get back to doing what I had originally started out to do.
Are these plays, now, we should point out that they're short, they're roughly 10 minutes. Is this kind of a new format for Frank Bartella to be involved in? Some of them, I'm guessing, have very little cast.
Well, actually, some of them could have casts of thousands.
Oh, they could. Okay.
Which, it's, you know, one of the helps of having that computer screen and showing images, you know, so our crowd scenes can be pictures rather than huge crowds on the stage. That tying it together with a giant computer and having these 7 short plays presented, it becomes almost instructional. It becomes a very audience involved. We'll be asking the audience to make decisions of right or wrong as they watch the plays. It'll be entertaining, but it'll also be instructional.
Will it be all the same actors appearing in all 7, or is it like literally directing 7 separate plays?
It is an ensemble cast
okay.
with people playing different parts.
Right.
And it will be maybe a matter of changing one costume piece, or, you know, putting out a representative of a prop to represent a space. It becomes more about what happens and why, rather than pure character pieces where everything is realistic and it's very fast moving. The multimedia aspect of it, we'll sort of tie it all together.
Is the multimedia aspect of it your idea, or does that come from the publishing company and their suggestions?
No, that's totally my idea. That's overarching theme, to tie all these together.
Oh, cool.
It is brought about by one of the plays. Flash Mob takes place in a computer. One of the characters is a webmaster who makes people log in and log off, brings to mind Tron or something inside of a inside of a computer. And then I thought one way around the crowd scenes is with the images that you could show. And then that raises possibilities of different things you can do. You can make comments on the screen while the action's going on, sort of like Colbert's Word, you know, where he's talking and then all of a sudden a thing will appear off to the side. Funny or making a comment about what's going on.
In the Spectrum West studio with us today is Frank Bartella. He's directing the Bully Plays, and they're coming to the Heidi Center for the Arts in Chippewa Falls in September. Is it the 14th and 15th?
14th and 15th, Saturday, I believe, at 7 o'clock, and Sunday matinee at 2.
the bully plays, I understand there's one about homosexuality, there's one about bystanders, one about having a talk with parents, one with a very descriptive name, Mindless Drooling Teenage Zombie Bullies. It's not all heavy stuff. There's some levity to it as well.
Yeah? Absolutely. There's a little bit of everything. Hopefully people will laugh. There's a part where, you know, it chokes me up even during rehearsal. Hopefully a lot of times people will be thinking and asking themselves questions and making choices while they're watching as well. It is instructional as well as entertaining. Characters do present different options to the audience and show how results can be obtained to stop bullying. There's really three different people that have to be involved for bullying to go on anywhere. There's
sure.
the bully, the person who is bullied, and then the most important person in the situation is the bystander,
mm-hmm.
the person who lets it happen, who does nothing, who walks away or turns away or stands to the side. Several of the pieces are making comments about the bystanders and what could be done to solve this problem for everybody.
Sure. Well, as we all know, bullying has received some publicity lately. Do you think that's because of the incidences of the cyberbullying? Maybe it's just brought it out to the forefront?
Lately, it does seem to be making more and more of the news, and you do hear of tragic occurrences, suicides, where people are taunted publicly on Facebook and social media. I think maybe the advent of social media enables bullying to really reach a wider audience than it would have when it would just be the local kids at the playground, you know, and when you walk away from them, you walk away from the situation. Now it's very hard to escape the situation when you find yourself being bullied. When I first started investigating these plays last September, I was copying different newspaper articles that were occurring in papers around the country, and it seemed that the beginning of the school year was raising a lot of awareness on bullying. In Iowa, the governor had passed a bunch of laws. There was a six-day series in the newspaper every day with a different aspect about bullying.
Hmm.
Rallies in the town, the paper that I was watching. They seemed to really be making a huge awareness of the issue. And I didn't see that going on here. I thought maybe that might be something we could get involved with the shows, to use it as a piece of propaganda, instructional, to raise awareness.
Are these plays designed for an all age? There's not any kind of tough language or anything that people should worry about, but young people should hear about bullying, I would guess.
Mm-hmm. There's not really tough language. There are some tough situations. I mean, one of the plays does touch on suicide, so it's very important not to make that be glamorous, not to make people think that's an option, you know, because to younger kids, you die and then you get back up again and become someone else, and that doesn't happen in real life. There's one or two words which we did leave in the script that the actors are comfortable saying that would be more
that you may not
realistic.
Hear on television?
You may not hear on television.
Okay. We hear a lot on television.
But they do hear it in schools, I'm sure. Mostly this is a group of kids, and they are really wonderful. You know, they wear their hearts on their sleeve. They become different people easily. Playing comes natural. So assuming these different characters for them is like jumping in and out of different play situations.
A lot of times as an actor, you know, you are asked to portray something that is fantasy. You know, you're on stage, you're having fun, you're flitting around. But this play or these plays are more, what? I mean, you're talking and living kind of like a regular individual. And you're trying to cause people to, I'm sure, leave the theater feeling as if they've eavesdropped on the lives and challenges of just regular folks. Is feeling real the whole idea behind these things? Should people leave the theater as if something very real happened to them?
There is that aspect to some of the shows. There is also a very theatricality to a lot of them, where you are watching a chorus of bystanders lament in rhythm, which you know, would not be something that you would probably really see, you know, on the playground or something.
Maybe but after these plays, you
it
know.
Is wonderfully theatrical, and if the rhythm is flowing, you know, it can become very powerful. So there's both. There is realism. There's also very strong theatricality, all with the purpose of instruction.
Personal question, what is the experience doing for you? How are you going to be a different person after these shows close?
I definitely will not be a bystander to bullying happening anywhere. And my son is no longer in school, but you can remember and think back to instances where he would come home and say things. And now I think back and I should have done some things differently. But as you mentioned earlier, bullying happens all over in many different situations. So I make it a point to stop it whenever I can. I'm using these shows to help raise awareness in the community in general. Make people make choices to stand up and do something themselves.
It's a very worthwhile project. I'm intrigued, and I hope a lot of people out there listening are intrigued. And the Heidi Center fills up the 14th and 15th of September. Frank Bartella, thanks for being with us. You're back in the theater now. I hope you're hooked again.
Thank you. I hope so, too.
Important and entertaining all-in-one package. Again, September 14th and 15th, The Bully Plays at the Heidi Center. Information always at cvca.net. Here's what's on stage in Western Wisconsin theater venues. The Red Barn Theater in Rice Lake is playing Unnecessary Farce through August 31st. Hanker and Hillbillies, a production of the Barron Spotlighter Summer Theater, will play through Saturday at the Barron Area Community Center. The Menominee Theater Guild's Shakespeare in the Park production of The Tempest will run through Sunday at the Wilson Park Bandshell in Menominee. Annie Get Your Gun, a production of the Willow River Players, is playing Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at the New Richmond High School Auditorium. Monty Python's Spamalot runs through Sunday at the Northern Star Theater in Rice Lake. There is no Saturday performance. Cumberland ETC will present Over the River and Through the Woods through Saturday. Bingo the Musical is playing at Fanny Hill Dinner Theater in Eau Claire. The show runs through Sunday. The Foreigner is playing through Sunday at the Festival Theater in St. Croix Falls. And the Eau Claire Children's Theater has scheduled auditions for Les Miserables 7 p.m. Sunday and Monday at the Oxford Theater in Eau Claire. And that's some of what's happening in live theater around the region. I'm Jim Oliver.
Thank you, sir. The Chippewa Valley Youth Symphony will be holding auditions for the upcoming season next Tuesday, the 27th. All the information is at their website, cvyouthsymphony.org. Thanks to Chia Vang for her report, Hillary Crusan for promotional support, Tiffany Coggins for archiving, to Western Wisconsin for providing so many interesting things to talk about, and to you for listening. We'll be here next Thursday morning. We'll talk about sand painting and Minnesota-Wisconsin craft beers are going to face off. Sewing with Nancy. Nancy Zeman's going to be here. I'm Al Ross. Have a great weekend. And again, we'll be here next Thursday.